it's about to fall. The people just call it the hole in the wall.
This is your 50,000 watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley. And for Los Angeles Lakers fans now believing this season's just a lock, let's cancel the rest of it. Start printing the 17th championship banner now. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN, Fresno.com. Your two-hour tour, shortened today by Cowboys Bears, begins right now. 6 minutes, 43 seconds past the hour of 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm the host of the program, Christopher Gabriel. Delighted to be with you on a gorgeous afternoon here in the Central Valley. It's an Art Hop Thursday. Come on down, join us, 1415 Fulton. We'll have a little bit of music, a little bit of hors d'oeuvres, some beverages, always a good time. It's free. Come on in and say hello. Producer of the program will say hello to Gonzo. How are you?
Good afternoon.
You were one of those people involved with the whole 17th banner.
I like pumping up Seawalk.
Okay, Seawalk, one of our regular listeners. You know, he's giddy. He's an overheated fan. I'm trying to pace him. He's young. You know, he's aggressive. He's Lakers proud. He's been in the dumps, probably like you have been. But, you know, you've had the Braves to at least take you to a certain point and then let you down. you know, don't even come back at me with the White Sox, because you can't insult the White Sox more than I can. You know, the White Sox, it's over June 1st. It's over, and I'm already into college football.
Again, I like pumping Seawalk up, and yep. he pumps me up for the Lakers season. So I want to push him a little bit further.
Yeah.
I want to go the opposite way of what you want to go.
You're not helping him. You're not helping him. You're turning him into this overzealous sort of reality check needed fan. You know, I mean, it's 22 games in, and he's already calling for the banner.
It's ready. It's there to be risen, yeah, up.
All right, as I said on Twitter, both of you get out of your vacuum and, you know, go out the front door, out of the vacuum, and come into the real world. I think it's great. I've said it before. I think it's great that the Lakers have got a strong team again. I you've heard me say it many times. There are different franchises in the four professional sports that are needed to be good. I think the league is better. You know, I'm not a Cowboys fan, but when the Cowboys are good, the league is better. In hockey, when the Montreal Canadiens are good, the league is better. In baseball, like them, hate them, somewhere in the middle, when the Yankees or the Dodgers are good, the league is better. And in you know, in basketball, when the Lakers are good, when the Celtics are good, the league is better.
It is, and it's about the hate factor, the love factor, and it just brings everybody to watch that game.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he might be going a little overboard saying it's what the nation wants. Okay, what nation is he talking about?
Talking about Laker Nation.
Yeah, is he okay? Maybe he's talking about Belgium or Laker Nation, because I know the folks in Kansas are just losing sleep over the Lakers. We kid because we care her. You want to weigh in during the program? You could certainly do that. Shorter program, as we said today, 844-940-3776. You can follow me on Twitter. I hope you do, at CG Program. You can follow Gonzo at
JLGonzo21.
All the podcasts from this show, one a day. That's how it works. We have one program, and then we have one podcast. Every minute, for better or for worse, can be found on 940ESPNFresno.com. You can email the program, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever you want to say, you can do it. We've had it all. CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. Today, more conference championship previews. Justin Phillips joins us. All three of these gentlemen have been on the program many times. Justin Phillips, KPNW Sports up in Eugene, Oregon. He covers the Ducks and he covers the Pac-12. Justin joins us at 3:35 to give us a preview of the Pac-12 championship tomorrow night at Levi's Stadium. And then at 4:05, we will check in with Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville. He covers the University of Tennessee. He also covers the entire SEC for Fox Sports. He will give us a preview of the SEC championship game, which may be the best game of the whole weekend. We'll have to see. That, of course, being Georgia and LSU. Lots of intrigue in that game. You have an unbelievable offense in LSU and an unbelievable defense in Georgia. who's going to be able to impose their will on the other. And then at 4:35, our good friend from The Athletic, he covers Boise State and all of college football, does a great job, Dave Southern. He is up in the chill of Boise, and we will talk Boise State and Hawaii. And as I said, we are out today at 5 for what I'm calling the 74th annual 6-6 Bowl, Cowboys and Bears. This is a game. When you look at this game tonight, the question that comes to mind for me, beyond being a Bears fan, is who is this game bigger for? Is it a bigger game for the Cowboys, or is it a bigger game for the Chicago Bears? I am going to say that I think this is a bigger game for the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys are 6-6. Eagles are right behind them at 5-7. The two teams will play each other one more time. They'll play in South Philadelphia on December 22nd. And you look at both teams' schedules, the Eagles have the Giants this weekend in Philly. They go to Washington, then I mentioned Dallas, and then they go to New York. The Cowboys, they've got the Bears, of course, tonight on the lakefront in Chicago. They have the Rams at home. They go to Philly, and then they've got Washington at home. Cowboys, if they lose this game, they are in a tie with the Eagles, and schedule notwithstanding, it becomes advantage. I think it becomes advantage Eagles if for no other reason than the Eagles-Dallas game is in the link in South Philadelphia. But you're looking at a situation where if the Cowboys win tonight, they're 7-6. They take a game, a game and a half lead. Is essentially before the Eagles play their game this weekend. The Bears, on the other hand, the Bears are 6-6, as I mentioned, and if they win tonight, they're 7-6, which is good for them. But they're not going to take over they're not going to win the NFC North. Packers are 9-3. The Vikings are 8-4. Bears and Vikings still play one more time. That game is going to be in Minnesota, but they're looking at a wild card right now. And the only wild card that I see right now, I mean, the wild card teams right now are the Vikings and either the Seahawks or the San Francisco 49ers. The Bears need a whole bunch of help. I think the Bears have basically said goodbye to their season with the way that they have just lost so many games inexplicably this year. And I'm curious, now that you've heard my take, where are you at? Which team do you think this is a bigger game for? Do you think it's for the 6-6 Cowboys or the 6-6 Chicago Bears?
It has to be for the Cowboys because they have a fight for the division. I don't think by much, because the future of the Bears also could be put into this game. You lose, your season is basically over, if not it is over, and you start thinking about the future. Is the quarterback that you have the right quarterback? Is the head coach you have the right head coach to lead you next season? And you start having a lot more questions. But again, if the Cowboys lose tonight, I think Jason Garrett is gone as well. So this is a make or break for them.
I think Jason Garrett is gone, period, whether he wins tonight or not. I do think that you bring up a point. For the Bears, I think Garrett is gone, especially when you heard Jerry Jones the other day. And I mean, I've been 50-50 on getting coaches right. I mean, I definitely missed. I think a lot of us missed on the Clay Helton situation. And there's some news out of USC that came out today a little bit earlier. We'll talk about that, about who SC was actually talking to and looking at. They deny it, but one report is pretty solid. And I talked to somebody earlier this morning who said that report was legit. But I think when Jerry Jones came out yesterday and said that Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year, you can interpret that a couple of different ways. One, he's not going to be on Dallas, or two, he's not made up his mind yet. I think that the run is over. I think the time has come where you've got Ezekiel Elliott locked up. You're going to get Dak Prescott locked up. Jason Witten is going to be back more than likely for another year or two. I think you've got a lot of other pieces on this Dallas Cowboys team, and I think that it's time for them. I think Jerry Jones just thinks it's time for a new direction. But the Bears, the Bears situation is interesting. You had a guy who was the coach of the year last year. They were 12-4, and a lot of people would like to say, well, they played an easy schedule. Well, in the NFL, nobody really cares about schedule. They care about wins. And they went 12-4, and then, to use the same word, they inexplicably lost because of Cody Parkey. It wasn't just that play, but the fact is they allowed Philadelphia to dictate that game in Chicago. The Bears should have put that game away early. They didn't. They found themselves in a position where they needed an unreliable kicker to make a simple kick, and he couldn't do it. The Bears, You do have to ask yourself, if the Bears just tank, I don't mean intentionally tank, but if the Bears' final four games absolutely just falls apart and they go 6-10, if you're Matt Nagy, even though you were coach of the year last year, and you're Ryan Pace, the GM, and you're the McCaskey family, Virginia McCaskey, you have to wonder, is the direction of the team, are they going the right way? They've got an unbelievable defense that has looked less than stellar this year, and I think a lot of the reason they've looked less than stellar is because, I think to a certain extent, I think they've just been worn out by Mitch Trubisky and this offense. So one of the rumblings that's been tossed around today, and you heard this in Chicago, and you've seen this written in Chicago, what about Ron Rivera? Might Ron Rivera, if they get rid of Matt Nagy, might Ron Rivera come to Chicago, bring his defensive philosophy there, and bring a Cam Newton with him? I don't know if it's too early to just make wholesale changes like that, but I think when you're Matt Nagy and 12-4 last year, you have underperformed this year. You want to cast the blame anywhere you want to. You can do that, but it starts with the creative team that decided to draft Trubisky a few years ago. Trubisky has regressed. I don't think anybody would debate that. And this is a team that, even if they weren't going to be a 12-4 team again this year, they sure as heck were going to be better at this point than 6-6.
Yeah, you would have thought so. And Ron Rivera, being a defensive-minded head coach, has led teams and puts the right coaches in the right spots to lead the team that he needs to be led. The Carolina Panthers that got to the Super Bowl, it didn't work out, but defensively, they were great. And I think the coordinator the Bears missed the most is Vic Fangio.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Fangio. Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Getting the job at Denver, he's done a great job over there. They could be a whole different team if they would win close games out in Denver as well. So you see things in that format, and maybe it's him making complete changes to his coaching staff and going forward.
I think when you look at Vic Fangio leaving, I'm glad you brought that up. I think sometimes we tend to forget the importance of a great coordinator on both sides of the ball. Look no further than Fresno State. I mean, with all due respect to Ryan Grubb and Bert Watts, look at what Kalen DeBoer did when he came here. Look what he's done. Look what he did at Eastern Michigan. Look what he has done at Indiana. Orlando Steinauer, the same thing, going back to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So you get to the professional level, and we sometimes think, well, you know what? The defense is already in place. They've got the personnel. Everything's fine. They've got a philosophy set up there. They'll just hand it off to somebody else there, or they'll bring somebody in, and he'll be able to just sort of take those same pieces and make them work. But it just doesn't work that way all the time, because you have somebody else coming in who is working with great talent, but he's got his own mind. He's got his own ideas on how those pieces should be fit into the defensive puzzle, and they're different than what was working beautifully last year.
Exactly. And in another, I guess, a coordinator that you can point at right now that's doing that kind of job is Robert Saleh for
yes.
the San Francisco 49ers, who I think if he leaves, that whole defense kind of changes completely. So, yeah, having great coordinators in your corner is fundamental in this entire situation, I think, for the Chicago Bears. Mitch Trubisky regressing is trying to open the playbook up for him, and I think that was the wrong move. I thought you had to kind of keep it where you were and move forward. And now the Chicago Bears are on that moment of, do we make a change? Do we go somewhere else? Or can we push this forward?
Yeah, and you know, it's water under the bridge now. And I've talked about it a few times in Cam Worrell when he's been on with me. I mean, with us. I mean, he's brought it up as well. But it really is hard to shake the understanding that you had a couple of guys, Patrick Mahomes, who maybe he wasn't flying. His numbers from Texas Tech weren't flying under the radar, certainly, but he was, because he was in the same draft with Deshaun Watson, and everybody knew what he could do. He wasn't some sort of running quarterback. He was in a pro-style offense under Dabo Sweeney, and Dabo came out and said, do not overlook Deshaun Watson. The teams that overlook him are going to be sorry. Bears are sorry.
They are. And he compared it to Michael Jordan. You're going to miss on a Michael Jordan kind of player. And Deshaun Watson, well, we have Lamar Jackson right now in the NFL as well, so he's the leading candidate for MVP. But Deshaun Watson has had a great season as well, and he's been great, and it looks like he's kept the Houston Texans up there. And yeah, how many quarterbacks can the Chicago Bears have missed? And now they're looking at it going, we traded up for this, and we went up in the draft. We lost picks, and we have our quarterback.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson. I mean, it's funny to think that – not funny, but it's interesting to think that Deshaun Watson has been – in some circles, ignored because of the great success that Lamar Jackson has had this year. But when you look at Deshaun Watson, I mean, he's thrown over 3,100 yards. He's got a nearly 4-to-1 TD to interception ratio. I mean, he's throwing for nearly 70%. The guy is having an unbelievable season. When he had his ACL, or was it an Achilles? I don't remember which
I believe one. It was ACL.
Yeah, you know, a lot of folks were concerned. Is his career over? He has come back stronger than ever, and it's hard to look at him and think this kid could have been in Chicago. Well, coming up, the University of Southern California. They have we talked about this yesterday, and we will probably talk about it more next week as well. I'm hoping to get Scott Wolf on the program. He has covered USC for 20 years. The Inside USC blog does a great job with that, and he talked about something this morning on his blog. And I mean, when I say blog, we're talking about somebody who is dialed in to the University of Southern California as deeply as anybody that you're going to find in the Los Angeles media base. And what he came out with blew my mind. We'll talk about that next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Email from Chuck. You can email me, CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. CG, the only thing the Bears will be good for at this point is my ground bear meat in my chili. Chuck, I'm begging you. I'm begging you to please put down the bottle in the afternoon. Please. Just stop. Heaven's sakes. Just, you know, he's a Packers rube, and got to deal with this from him. Goodness. I read this morning from Scott Wolf. Scott Wolf has the Inside USC blog, and it's pretty solid. There's no doubt when you read what Scott's covering. It's Scott, or the way Scott covers USC, and I've read Scott for years. You know, he's not just, you know, a media member. He is a full-blown SC guy in terms of the way he covers SC, but he's rarely wrong. I mean, he is all over USC football, and I'm just going to read you what he wrote. You can choose to believe Mike Bone when he said he never spoke to other coaches, but even inside the McKay Center, which is one of the big athletic centers on campus at USC, the hot topic was former Oklahoma coach Bob Stoops. Sources said USC spoke to Stoops, but things broke down over how much money his coaching staff would be paid. And I'll just leave it at that right there, and then I'll give you my thought on this. So when it was clear that Utah was going to play for the Utah and Oregon were going to play for the Pac-12 championship, that USC's chances were squashed when Utah won their game over Colorado, then we said on this program you expected to hear immediately an announcement that if he was coming back, if Clay Helton was coming back, there's no reason to delay that announcement. None. When I read this morning, I contacted my source, who is a real good one down there, and he confirmed what Scott's saying, that this is legit. I don't have any reason to doubt Scott Wolf, and I don't have any reason to doubt my source. I don't know Mike Bone. I have no history of knowing how he operates. When Mike Bone comes out and says, none of this is true, quite honestly, I'm not really sure that I believe him. So let's just go with the idea that Scott and my source are correct, that USC did speak to Stoops, and that there was a breakdown over how much money his coaching staff would get paid. And make no mistake, USC has... USC could buy a small country, maybe a medium-sized country. USC has plenty of money to pay people. If this is, in fact, the sticking point, that it was money for Bob Stoops' staff, shame on SC. You can go on and on all you want about what a high-quality guy Clay Helton is, and that Carol Folt, the president, thinks that he is just the man. But I'll tell you, they have alienated a whole bunch of people in this fan base. And if you didn't notice this year, USC crowds, fans were not exactly filling up the revamped Coliseum. Now, winning cures everything. Winning cures everything. But as it stands right now, even though USC, the last couple of years, not this past year, had top 10, they had top 10 recruiting classes in six straight years. Right now, they are 67th. And this goes back to what Gonzo and I talked about yesterday. If they are 67th, well, they are 67th, recruits are looking at this one way or the other. They want to see if Clay Helton is coming back. But that's the door that swings both ways. Do they, are they, were they waiting to see Helton was going to get firmed up? And then they say, you know what, I'm throwing in with SC. Or were they waiting to see if they were going to go a different direction and then say, okay, now I'm in for SC. They're going a different direction. I'll tell you this. Mike Bone can talk from now until next Christmas about the quality of guy, a paragon of virtue and everything that Clay Helton is. Clay Helton will never recruit the kind of talent that Bob Stoops could recruit at USC. Bob Stoops is a national championship winner. Bob Stoops, after 10 mediocre years of 61, 50, and three ties at Oklahoma after Barry Switzer, he came in. He goes a couple of games over 500 his first year. He goes undefeated, wins a national championship the following year. He didn't win another national championship after that, but he played in a lot of big games. He brought that program back to where they were. He would have been an unbelievable choice for USC.
He would have it. And back to your point of the fact that if a recruit was waiting or not waiting, I think that hurts you regardless. Whether they're waiting or not waiting, it hurts the fact that they don't know what's happening with the coaching position, so they're just not going to make a decision. And if they are, and they're saying, you know what, we want to make a decision, we're going to go somewhere else, and that hurts your program.
Well, there's no question about it. And the fact is, Mike Bone was asked. He was asked, why did it take 4 days? This is his response. Why didn't you know Sunday what you know now? And this is what he said. It's a fair question. The answer is nothing new as far as what we're learning. As I told the team, we've been working hard ensuring that we have alignment on the ability for us to invest more in this program. Looking at how we put those in play, we just needed some extra time to do that. There was no reason to rush. That's nonsense. The fact that he believes anybody believes that is ridiculous. You are USC. And I say this, I'm not some day-in, day-out USC fan. Yeah, I went there. I went there a long time ago. The fact that he is trying to make people believe that it took 4 days to decide on whether or not Clay Helton was going to come back, or that they had decided but they wanted to accrue a little bit more information, seems to me much more likely that they were talking to Bob Stoops, and maybe they threw a feeler out to Urban Meyer, and maybe they threw a feeler out to James Franklin, both of which will be there next year. Maybe Mike Bone said, you know what, here's what we're going to do. And you and I said this yesterday. We're going to give this guy a year under my tutelage, or under our tutelage, meaning him and Carol Folt watching from the penthouse at Bovard Auditorium at USC, or the president's house, and then say, you know what, another 8-4 year, or 7-5, or it's 9-3, didn't win the Pac-10 again, the Pac-12, excuse me. Now we're going to make a change. That simple.
Yeah, and again, I don't like when they do that, when they act as though, these 4 days mattered so much to make the decision. Yeah, it might have mattered so much because you were, like you said, putting out those feelers, seeing if you can get someone, seeing if someone was really interested in the program. So maybe those 4 days did matter, but not for the reason that he is giving.
Exactly. So, talking about SC, let's traverse over to the Pac-12 championship game. Coming up next, we go up the road to Eugene, Oregon, and visit with our friend at KPNW Sports, our guy Justin Phillips. He will give us a preview of the Oregon-Utah game. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN and 940ESPNFresno.com. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
A lot of people don't know this, but KPNW sports reporter Justin Phillips, he's got moves like Michael Jackson. He's going to say that. Get that out in the open right now. He is our guy up in Eugene, covers Oregon Athletics. He also covers the Pac-12. We bring him into play right now. Justin, how the heck are you? Justin, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Sounds like a commercial.
All right, there we go.
There you go. Hey, before we get going here, I've got to ask, how's the Palace coming along? I'm talking, of course, about the new Hayward Field, which looks like something that, you know, that it's incredible.
It is. Compared to what it was before, I mean, this new the new one that they're building is probably three-quarters of the height or a little bit higher. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
It's tall. And it's all the way around. It's not, you know, there's no cutouts anywhere. It is definitely a palace. And we'll get a chance to see it, Pac-12 championships next year, and then, of course, for the Olympic trials next July.
Yeah, it's kind of the AT&T Stadium of college track. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, it's going to be the most state-of-the-art one when it's opened. In the world.
Incredible. Well, we've got a great game at a very cool stadium tomorrow night, Utah and Oregon for the Pac-12 championship. Utah comes in, they've won 8 straight to close the regular season. Overall, Oregon comes into the game 10-2, 11-1 for the Utes. And Utes ranked number 5, Oregon is ranked number 13. Why do you think, besides the fact that in the P5 conferences, I don't think there's any question that the Pac-12 is not going to be confused with the SEC, with the Big Ten, and even the Big 12. But beyond that, why do you think the country just has seemingly so little respect for the Pac-12?
This goes back forever. It's the whole, you play your games at 7 o'clock. By halftime, people are going to bed on the East Coast. They're not going to watch. They don't care. And that still stands true in some aspects, I think, for some of the viewership for the conference. I mean, they've tried to make it better, obviously, with, you know, last time we spoke or 2 times ago we spoke, they were throwing a potential 9 a.m. game out there, which hopefully that does not come to fruition anytime soon. They've thrown the 11 a.m. option in that rotates on a 3-year basis. I think the Ducks are back into that rotation for next year or the year after. But I mean, if you look at Oregon this year, obviously they're the team that everybody wants to follow because they're the hot team going into the potential postseason there. And all of our games are after 5 o'clock at night.
How much did that Arizona State loss? I mean, I watched that game start to finish, and Justin Herbert, if you've never seen Justin Herbert play, and you're one of those fans east of the Mississippi, you're basically saying, well, what's the big deal? This kid is terrible. That game was an anomaly. He's a terrific quarterback. But what happened in that game?
Your guess is as good as ours. I'm speaking for the university, of course. But, I mean, you just have a bad game. Everybody has a bad game. He had a chance. If they had another 5 minutes in that game, if it was a 65-minute game, they probably would have come back and won it, right? Because they had, you know, yeah. But Arizona State has all NFL coaches. Their time of possession for that game was like close to 40 minutes. They took the game away by taking the ball out of Herbert's hands. That's how they won the game.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. So let's talk about the two quarterbacks in this game tomorrow night. On the one hand, for the Utes, you have Tyler Huntley. All this kid does is throw for completes about 76% of his passes at over 11 yards an attempt. He is right in there, the top 5, 6, 7 quarterbacks statistically in the nation. But I would challenge anybody to tell me if I went up to anybody again in the eastern half of the country, maybe in Tuscaloosa or out in Clemson. Do you know who Tyler Huntley is? Nobody has any idea. On the other side, you have Herbert, big kid, big arm, 31 touchdowns against just 5 interceptions. Let's start with Herbert, actually. What makes him so good? Is it vision, mobility, decision-making, a little bit of all those?
It's a little bit of all of those. I mean, it's obviously it didn't show against Arizona State. It didn't really show against Oregon State. But this game and the next game, he has a chance to show, you know, pretty much everybody in the country what he's all about. And I'm hoping that he decides to do that, you know, tomorrow night, because we really didn't see it against Arizona State. Oregon State last week, yeah, they won the game, but there was one point where it was back and forth in the middle for most of the third and early fourth quarter where Oregon State was just within 7 points.
Right, and on the other side of the ball, you have Tyler Huntley, over 2,700 yards throwing. What jumps out immediately, two things that jump out, and they're connected, obviously, is his TD to interception ratio is 8-1. He's only thrown 16 TDs, couple of interceptions, but that's because they have a guy named Zach Moss, who was an absolutely terrific running back. Break down the Utah offense, because they are explosive and they are efficient.
Well, this is the thing about Utah. Is Zach Moss. He's the real deal. He has over 1,200 yards this season. He leads the conference. If they're going to be in this game and win it, you got to get him the ball, hands down. You know, you've got a game here where you've got, you know, two of the top offensive defensive lines. Either way that you look on who's on what side of the ball, they're 1-2 both sides. So it's going to be a chess match, and I have a feeling that this game may actually come down to a special teams play. For who's going to win it.
So that we're talking about Justin Phillips, KPNW up in Eugene, Oregon. You've heard him on this program a number of times. He covers Oregon athletics, and he also covers the Pac-12, does a great job. And we're talking Pac-12 championship game tomorrow, late tomorrow afternoon at Levi's Stadium, just up the road from here, the Ducks and the Utes. Utah's defense ranked total defense ranked third in the nation. And I'm giving a lot of stats for people who have not necessarily watched these teams this year, just to give folks a baseline. But as you look at Utah, that defense, I mean, they had one slip this year, and that was at USC, and they have got, I've been saying this pretty much whenever we talk about this, Justin, that team has gotten better every game. Their defense looks a little stronger every game. What is it about their defense that makes them so hard to deal with?
It's not just Utah's defense. Utah overall is probably the most complete team in the country right now, both sides of the ball. Hands down, most complete team as far as, you know, experience, what they've gained this season, what they've learned, where they're going, trajectory, where they want to go. They are the most complete team going into this week.
That's, and the thing is, as you say that, that reminds me of the Paul Feinbaum quote from yesterday, which I'm sure you heard. If you didn't hear it, do we still have it, Gonzo? Do we still have the Paul Feinbaum from yesterday? Do we still have that? That, I mean, when he came out and he said, talking about teams that the country wants to see, and he said, essentially said, nobody in the nation wants to see Utah. Nobody cares about Utah. I would just completely disagree with that, because I want to kind of drift into the college football playoffs with you a little bit.
Yeah.
Here. I think one of the problems for college football, Justin, is that there's a certain amount of magic that's missing that we do see in March because of the Butlers and the UMBCs and the VCUs and George Masons. And that is encouraged. We want to see that. Do we have that, Gonzo? Let's just let people hear this again. Here's what Paul Feinbaum said yesterday.
The following scenarios, okay? Oklahoma beats Baylor and wins the Big 12. Utah beats Oregon and wins the Pac-12. And LSU takes care of business against Georgia. Who gets the fourth spot?
Oklahoma's getting in. Because let's be honest, the country does not want to see Utah in the college football playoff. It's Utah. So
yeah, so you've got that mentality, and you've got Paul Feinbaum, who I like, but I think he's wrong. I think he's wrong, and I think one of the things that the college football playoff, because it's only four teams, lacks is the excitement of a Utah coming in, if it's Utah, or an Oregon for that matter. Oregon's I'm not a big fan of the word brand, but it's a much bigger brand. But it's still, you've got people in other parts of the country that are just like, why do we want to care about a Pac-12 team? What's your take on everything there, especially him saying, who cares about Utah?
Well, I mean, like I said before, it goes back to, you know, the whole, you know, the nighttime game thing, the whole Pac-12 West Coast side. Utah deserves a shot, I think, over the other teams. Take the loss to USC out. And you've got, like I said, a complete team who has, you know, one loss. They're going up against, you know, I think better competition in Oregon than what the number of what Oregon actually shows right now. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about, you know, Oregon potentially being, you know, playing for that same four spot. Mm-hmm. and saying, if it's a 4 versus a 9, that's a top 10 matchup that's going to, give a better look when it comes to getting into the college football playoff. Even though the Ducks are 14, I think it's still a better look than what these other conferences are looking at.
No, I would agree with that. Absolutely. Justin, how much are you able to gauge that Oregon may be tired of hearing about Utah and their chance to go to the college football playoff? How much, if any, has that been a motivating factor this week?
I haven't heard that at all. It's down to business. Coaches and players and said, hey, there's only 2 Pac-12 teams practicing this week, us and Utah. So that pretty much, says to me right now that they're going to take a business approach like they have to pretty much every other road game this year, because it's a road game. And try to get that, Pac-12 championship and get into the Rose Bowl. Here's the funny little caveat. Everything Oregon has done the last couple of weeks may not really matter in the grand scheme of things, because you've got, if you look at the college football playoff numbers, you've got USC at 22, Oregon's at 14. If Oregon loses the game against Utah, Utah wins, gets into the college football playoff, Oregon's probably looking at the Rose Bowl either way.
Yeah, right. That's fair. That's fair analysis.
If Utah ends up on the outside looking in after beating Oregon as 5 or 6, then they're going to go to the Rose Bowl and then on down the line. But that's come up here this week too, a little bit of, how much does Oregon really want this game, considering they may end up going to the same place?
Yeah, no, that's.
I think they still want it. I think they want it in the fact that, okay, we want to be Pac-12 champs. We want to go to the Rose Bowl, potentially be Rose Bowl champs going into next season, which we talked about that a little bit yesterday and what they're going to be facing heading into 2020.
If Oregon wins and they go to the Rose Bowl, does Utah find their way into a New Year's Six Bowl still? Would they go to the Fiesta Bowl?
I believe they might.
Okay. We were talking about Zach Moss a minute ago. Because of the presence of Zach Moss, does C.J. Verdell get overlooked?
I believe so. Of course, the last couple of weeks, it's not hard to overlook Oregon's running game that much, because it really hasn't existed.
Right.
First 9 weeks of the year, you've got Verdell, you've got Dye. Some have been banged up a little bit in coming back from that and getting healthy here, for the last couple of games. But I absolutely think Verdell has been overlooked by Moss. But, when you've got a guy who's ripping out 1,200 yards in a year, there aren't many people that aren't going to be overlooked.
Right. No question. And we're talking a little bit about defense. Both schools, both Oregon and Utah, have only given up 4 rushing TDs the entire year. That's really, really impressive. Give me an assessment of who has to impose their will more to be successful, because you've got skilled players on both sides of the ball for both teams. You mentioned that you think it might be a special teams situation that could win this game. But if there's one unit that could tip the balance of this game for either team, which is it?
I think it's the Oregon defense. They have a little bit to prove after the last couple of weeks. I think you could see a big play from one of the quarterbacks. You've got Troy Dye with his giant club on his hand in the middle, who is healing from that broken hand from Washington. But it's kind of fun watching him on the sideline throwing that thing around.
I'm sure.
But I think the Oregon defense needs to step up and show that, they are where they were earlier in the season, as a top 10 team. I mean, you've got Utah right now with the 6th best, offense in the country. Oregon at some point, was there during the season, but even though they're ranked 14th, they still have, a top 15 offense and a top 15 defense going into this game tomorrow night.
Oregon has been on the big stage, irrespective of the fact that this is the second straight championship game appearance for the Utes. Oregon's been on the big stage much more as a program than Utah. Do you see that factoring into this game at all? Because for Oregon, it's the Rose Bowl. That's big. For Utah, it's potentially the biggest stage, the college football playoff. Do you think that their lack of big moments like this plays into this at all?
I think it might a little bit, but I mean, when you play, when you're playing your home games at a pretty good sized stadium at Rice Eccles, as loud as it gets there, I don't think that that's really going to be much of a factor. Because basically you're on the field, you're playing between the lines. So everything right. else kind of blocks itself out. But you know, I think the coaches are pretty good at kind of letting them know, you know, and kind of, you know, keeping them where they need to be focused on what's at hand, and that's the game.
You know, as long as you mentioned Rice Eccles, we've both been there. That is a place, that is one of the more underrated places to see a game in college football, because those fans are into it, and it is a loud place.
It is. It is.
I mean, it's. I don't think it's as loud as Autzen, but it's pretty close.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. No. Well, listen. I've been to Autzen, and I'm going to tell you, I love Autzen, but when it's at its zenith, compared to Death Valley at LSU or Neyland in Tennessee or the Swamp, I don't know that Autzen is as loud as those. But you know, when you get into the 100 to 120 decibels, does it really matter? you know what I love about Autzen. And similar to Rice Eccles, is that Autzen. I mean, the fans could practically touch the lines judge. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And this year, there have been some that have really, really tried.
give me your take. Your assessment. Who wins? I know you cover Oregon, but who wins this game?
I mean, we've talked about, you know, pretty much everything on both sides. I think Oregon shows up, gets the win, and it's close. It's going to be like a 31-21 win.
Okay. You are going with the Ducks. You think they're going to win, and we will make a note of that. We've had folks, you know, covering the other conferences. We have Trey Wallace coming up next from Fox Sports down in Knoxville, Tennessee. He also handles the whole SEC besides the Vols. We'll see what he thinks about LSU, Georgia. But we have marked you down as Ducks on to Pasadena, and there it is. Justin Phillips, folks, KPNW sports reporter, covers Oregon athletics, does a tremendous job. And, Justin, always a lot of fun to have you on the program, my friend.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. JP, doing his usual great work. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Is this a Jackson Family Retro Bumper Thursday? I remember this song when I was a kid.
I played the other one and it reminded me about this, so I needed to play this one.
Yeah, he was a cute kid. Him and Jermaine and Tito and the whole gang. They were fun to watch. You couldn't get away from watching the Jackson 5. It was the Jackson 5 when it started. I don't remember when they actually went to the Jacksons. And, of course, Michael went off on his own, and Janet and the whole gang. Coming up in hour number two, we are going to venture east to the beautiful Smoky Mountains and visit with my very good pal, Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville. He covers the entire SEC along with his normal beat, which is the Tennessee. It is the Tennessee Volunteers, and we've got the SEC championship game on tap, Georgia, LSU from ATL, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. This is going to be, this may be the game of the weekend. I mean, you've got two teams very much capable of winning the national championship. I don't think there's not any other game, any other championship game that I think you have that.
And not only that, but you also have a Georgia team that's only has just been hearing, listening, the fact that they're going to lose.
That's
what everybody's already assuming. They're losing. They're out of the playoffs. And they're like, oh, well, wait a second. We got to play this game first.
That's exactly right. Coming up, it's our man, Trey Wallace. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
football.
To Harper, a stiff arm, fending him off all the way to the goal line. Touchdown, Fresno.
940 ESPN, KFIG Fresno. From the studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California, this is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
It is hour number two of today's two-hour tour. We're losing 1 hour because the Cowboys and the Bears decided to go ahead and play their game, the 6-6 Bowl in Chicago. So hour number two begins right now, 5 minutes, 23 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. CG here with you, Gonzo, keeping us on the right rails going forward. You know, I always love hooking up with my man, the voice of Knoxville, The Drive. He's the host of that program, the co-host, I think, of that program, Fox Sports Knoxville. When you need information on the SEC or the Tennessee Volunteers, you go to one person, Trey Wallace. He joins me right now. My man, how are you?
My brother, it's so good to talk to you, man. And I wouldn't be able to get through every day without Russell Smith and Bear, and we always have a good time here. Eastern coast of things, man, but so happy to be on with you out in California tonight to talk some football.
Absolutely. Maybe we start with this. LSU is number two in scoring offense. Georgia's number two in scoring defense. Does it seem to you like, and you've covered the SEC forever, that LSU, they are making up for all the years that they didn't have a quality quarterback?
You know what? It's fun to watch this. And me growing up, I grew up on the coast, the Gulf Coast of Mobile, Alabama. And, you know, I was through the times where LSU, you know, they had a quarterback, you know, in the early 2000s, and they were able to take advantage of that. And, Christopher, you look at it in the last – I don't know, 8 years, 9 years. I mean, you had, you know, Zach Mettenberger, you know, thrown in there. But you really look at it and you always think, man, if LSU had a quarterback, they could potentially be playing for these national championships, you know, every other year. And I'm under the belief that if LSU had a quarterback, a good, reliable quarterback like Joe Burrow has been in the last 9 years, I think LSU would probably have one or two more national championships, buddy.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. So I guess let's flip to the other side of LSU. The biggest surprise for me is the fact that LSU's defense isn't a top five, top 10 defense this year. There is in the 30-35 range in terms of overall, you know, total defense. That's a very un-LSU number. But is that a deceptive ranking because they've got players on that side of the ball?
Well, you also have to look at it, too, is you look at LSU's offense, and it kind of goes parallel. They've been so able to put together long drives this year and eat up a lot of clock. And I know Joe Burrow, they could score fast if they want to, but they really found a running game with Clyde Edwards. You've got a passer in Joe Burrow that can hit up these talented LSU wide receivers. And, you know, it's taking the ball out of the opponent's hands. And I think if you look at LSU's defense, what have we always known about LSU's defense? It's that they've got the safeties and they've got the defensive line. Mm-hmm. And you could throw some linebackers in there in between as well. And usually it's a stout defense. I think the numbers are a little bit interesting this year, but it hasn't been LSU's game. LSU's game has been, you know, we're going to score a lot more points than you. You might be able to throw some touchdowns on us and get on the board, but we're just going to try to boat race you. I mean, I think would be the perfect example is what happened in Oxford, you know, about 5-6 weeks ago where, yeah, LSU got up there in the points in the 50s or whatnot. I'm forgetting the final score, but I know Ole Miss got up there in the high 20s and, you know, made that a game. And I think if you look at it right now, I think LSU has found the perfect formation of how they're trying to run this football team. And if you're going to beat LSU, you're probably going to have to score 30-plus points, you know, a game to do it. And when's the last time we've been able to say that about LSU Tiger football?
Absolutely right. We're talking with my good friend Trey Wallace. He hosts the very popular The Drive. I was going to say just the very popular Drive, but it's The Drive with Russell Smith, Fox Sports, Knoxville. Let's look at Georgia for a second. You know, obviously they have a great defense. Their offense, I would call their offense serviceable. It does what it needs to do and not a whole lot more. I mean, they kind of bore me when I watch them play, and yet, you know, this is a team that has Jake Fromm. What do you make? You've watched them this year. You've seen them up close. You've seen them up close in Knoxville. What do you make of this Jake Fromm offense?
I think it's an offense that long, sustainable drives, Jake Fromm being able to hit the 10 to 15 yard out, get the first downs when needed. They're not going to woo you this year when it comes to points on the board. And don't even look at the Georgia Tech game. I know people, oh, they scored, you know, in the 50s against it's Georgia Tech. Their defense
is horrible. Right.
So you really look at what, and I have. I've gotten to watch them up close in person once this year. And then I've watched a bunch of their games. And, you know, you look at how they're trying to manage the offense. And, you know, Tennessee fans are quick to point this out here in Knoxville. And maybe I agree with them a little bit that what things have fallen off maybe a tad bit is Jim Chaney not being the offensive coordinator at Georgia anymore. It's been interesting to see, and they had the wide receivers. That's the thing. It's been interesting to see to me just how not potent this offense has been, maybe is the best word. And I think going into a game, now look, let me say this too. Don't get me wrong. Georgia is a good football team. They have players at running back. Their offensive line, they've been kind of throwing guys kind of all around there in a sense. I know Cade Mays has played five different positions this year for Georgia's offensive line, but I think it's serviceable. I think they can get what they're trying to get done work, but my problem is, and in my thinking going to this, is Georgia's defense good enough to keep LSU from scoring 35 points on Saturday, and I just don't know if they are.
I think that you've hit on the crux of the game, and once again, you've probably been looking over my shoulder somehow at my notes because we were going to get to that.
I knew.
That's your way. You mentioned Jim Chaney. Let's talk about him for a second because he is that guru-like offensive figure like Norm Chow was for so many years. And there are fans that don't know who Jim Chaney is, but he has this sort of iconic vibe to him. He was a fixture at Georgia. What was it? What did we learn, or what did you learn, Trey, that really compelled Jim Chaney to leave what Kirby Smart has turned into an established national championship contending program and then go a couple hours away and go to Knoxville to join Jeremy Pruitt?
Look, first of all, I'll say this about Jim Chaney. If a lot of people maybe on the West Coast don't know of Jim Chaney, just know that the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees, one of his proteges. I mean, what he was able to do with him, and you look at his career now, Drew Brees has talked about Jim Chaney a lot. I think what got Jim Chaney to Knoxville was two things. I think Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt knew that they needed to get an offensive coordinator in there where they can just be hands-off. You know what? Go do your thing. Teach our quarterbacks. Run our offense. I'm not going to get involved in it much, you know, and you do your thing. Jim Chaney comes when he came from Georgia and what he was able to do with Jake Fromm. I think it shows wonders. And Tennessee fans knew Jim Chaney because of his time in Knoxville before underneath the Kiffin area, and he was actually the head coach for a game or two. So I look at what Jim Chaney's been able to do from an offensive coordinator standpoint, and he was able, in my opinion, I think Jerick Garantano has been able to buy into what Jim Chaney was doing. You look at the former quarterbacks that he's been around and been with every single day, but also it's the type of offense that he runs. He's going to throw these 20-yard outs, these slants across the middle. He wants to run the football every now and then to set up the throw, but he's very methodical with the way he runs his offense. And, you know, I don't know if I could pinpoint that to Georgia this year. I know a lot of people want to, but you look at it, Jake Fromm, to me personally, he doesn't feel like the same quarterback as the Jake Fromm from last year. And maybe that's just the type of offense they're trying to run this year. But, and I will say Jim Chaney in Tennessee, it's a great match. He's always had a place here in Knoxville ever since he left. I think Chaney will be here until he retires. And he likes being in the Smoky Mountains and being with family. So in the end, it worked out. Tennessee opened up the checkbook. They paid him what, you know, they thought was the right cost. And I think it's going to be very helpful over the next couple of years, especially if potentially Jared Garantano comes back next year. If not, they've got a young kid in Brian Maurer. They've got a kid in Harrison Bailey coming in. So I think Tennessee's going to be fine, and that's been a problem ever since Josh Dobbs left, was finding somebody that can run this offense, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I think that's very well said, and I think I really do believe, even though Georgia fans would like to downplay it, when you look at what they've done on balance this year, I really do believe that they have, irrespective of the talent that Jake Fromm has and a couple of receivers we're going to talk about in just a second that he's not going to have, at least one of them for a half, irrespective of the offensive talent, I think that they have missed Jim Chaney in that booth.
And that's recognizable, though. I mean, look all around college football. If a quarterback loses their offensive coordinator and a QB coach, a guy that you're with, you know, for 12, 14 hours out of the day, you know, for every day, you know, off season, in season, you know, things fall off. That's everywhere in college football. You know, so it might be something that USC might be dealing with, you know, in the next couple of weeks if Graham Harrell decides to leave out in L.A. and go take another job.
Right.
So it happens all around college football. Maybe Georgia just unfortunately felt a little bit of that this season.
I'm talking with my buddy Trey Wallace, co-host of The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville. Jake Fromm's not going to have a couple of wide receivers, at least one of them. George Pickens going to miss first half due to a suspension. Lawrence Cager is out because of an ankle injury. Does Georgia, Trey, do they have the offensive depth to weather that?
Dude, I mean, Christopher, losing Cager, okay, that's one thing. Okay, that happens. That's football.
Right.
You know, but losing Pickens the way that happened in the first half where he just, you know, it's unfortunate. You get caught up in the game, okay? You get caught up in the game.
Tell folks what happened. Tell folks what happened.
You can't. Well, folks, there was a play down in the end zone pretty much. George Pickens, he got entangled, I guess the best word, with a Georgia Tech defender in the end zone. They were pushing and shoving. They were both holding on to each other, grabbing each other. Finally, George Pickens just grabs the guy by the face mask and literally pulls a WWE-type move and slings him into the barrier.
Yeah.
And it was
ugly.
First of all, I was like, dang, I can't believe he has that much strength just to swing the guy into the barrier. But then second of all, you really go back and think about it, and you're like, okay, wow, he only got suspended a half or something like that, which I find interesting. And don't get me started about getting suspended for a half. That's not been a great talking point here in Knoxville.
I know. Juwan Jennings, yeah.
But I will say this, that, you know, you get caught up in the moment, you get heated, you're 18 to 21 years old. Unfortunately, you got to try to control that emotion, and it hurts. It hurts Georgia now, because what if LSU comes out and they're up, you know, two or three scores, and, you know, it puts Georgia in a bad position where you're two wide receivers down, and they're going to have to rely on their run game, and they're going to have to rely on their tight end, somebody that should be familiar to Tennessee fans and in the SEC, Eli Wolf, who's doing some pretty nice things down in Athens as well.
When you hear Ed Ogeron say the following, and I'm quoting, "I don't know if we've got a win to get in the playoffs or not. Our goal is to beat Georgia and win the SEC. Then let's see what happens," close quote. Come on. Why do coaches say that? I mean, of course you want to beat Georgia and win the SEC, but why do coaches act like they don't really know what's going on? You know, and I know that when they're away from the players, they are darn well certain of what they need to do and what needs to happen. And Ed knows if they win, they're in.
Look, let's break a little secret on air. All coaches read articles on websites.
Every one of them.
Newspaper clippings. They want to say that they don't. But I promise you they do.
Yep.
All those coaches know exactly what's going on around college football. Personally, he knows if he loses to Georgia, you know, by 10 points, 14 points, whatever, he's still in the college football playoff.
Yep.
He knows that. But I think it's a good mindset for Georgia. I mean, for LSU, don't think about it. Go up there, take care of business in Atlanta. But, you know, sometimes, and you know this and I know this, sometimes you get asked the question 30,000 times, and you got to figure out maybe different ways to answer it. And, you know what? If they can understand what Coach O said, then transcribe and have at it.
That's exactly right. Talking to Trey Wallace.
I love that, dude.
Oh, I do too. There are quite a few people, I can tell you, at USC, in the USC family, that are upset that the athletic administration at the time didn't have the patience to keep Ed Orgeron.
You know, and it's such a bad situation at USC. We talked about that today with Aaron Torres, somebody that lives out in L.A., and you know Aaron.
Sure.
I feel, and I know you guys are out there on the West Coast, and you're going to see it on the weekly news and the evening news and all that good stuff, but the way that was handled, I thought that was a slap in the face to Clay Helton. I can tell you for a fact that Sunday, when that report came out, Clay Helton was in-house with a player, and his son called him and told him the news that he thought his dad was getting fired.
Yeah.
I don't think any of this has been handled well for USC. I do think that they reached out to Bob Stoops, and I think they reached out to Urban Meyer. They're never going to admit it because they probably got turned down or things didn't work out. But the fact that you're going to come out and just make yourself look stupid and lie to your fans and say, well, you know what, we didn't even talk to anybody else. I don't know what you're talking about. And then the fact that they haven't played in 2 weeks, it makes yourself look even dumber. So,
Before you came on, I could tell you that I talked to my source down at USC this morning, and he confirmed for me what was put out there, all over the place about Bob Stoops, and I don't believe for a second that Mike Bone didn't talk to him. And the point that I made about all this, and I'm sure that you and your guys did as well, and you and Aaron Torres did as well, is, listen, when we realized what the Pac-12 championship was going to be, why did it take 4 days? If you're going to bring them back and put the press release out that day. There's only one answer, and you know it as well as I do, that it not only Stoops, but somebody probably threw a phone call Urban Meyer's way. Somebody probably threw a phone call to James Franklin, and who knows who else, but this whole business that Mike Bone said about, we were just accruing some more information, is a bunch of nonsense.
No, it is a bunch of nonsense. And it makes you, look, we live in the day and age where it's 24 hours a day news cycle. All you got to do is look down on your phone, and you're figuring out different things every which way but loose. And you know what? You got to look. It's athletic director speak, okay?
Yep.
And we all get it, the cover it. We get it. But to the normal fan out there just scrolling through Twitter or reading something online, you look at that statement, you got to be out of your mind. I never thought personally that Bob Stoops, the fit at USC, just didn't feel right. Like, I don't know about Bob Stoops. Urban Meyer, a different story. You can't tell me, over the last 2 months, when things have not been going USC's way, and every single reporter out there on the West Coast has been talking about this is Clay Helton's last year, you can't tell me they weren't reaching out to Urban or James Franklin, you know, or Bob Stoops through their other agents, Jimmy Sexton and whatnot. So, you know, that's the coaching business. It's unfortunate. But USC made themselves look even worse with these ridiculous statements.
No, I absolutely right. And I don't know if you have this little fact, this little tidbit, but I'll give it to you just in case you don't have it. The top 24 rated high school seniors coming out of the state of California, not a single one of them is interested in USC. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that's how bad it's gotten. According to Rivals, they are the 67th. Ranked recruiting class right now. So SC has gone to new levels in terms of finding ways to screw things up. They'll eventually get back to where they're used to being, but I don't think it's going to happen next year.
Brother, let me tell you something. Growing up, you know, USC was the name, and USC still carries that name, in my opinion. But the problem, here's the way I'll say this. I say this the same way that I say it with Tennessee to some fans. USC, it's almost, what have you done for me lately? These 18 to 19, well, first of all, it's recruiting, actually. So these 16 to 18-year-old kids, you know, what have you done lately for them to really know who you are besides your dad or mom telling you that it's USC? I mean, I get that, you know, the Rose Bowl and how fantastic it was, maybe the greatest game ever and all that good jazz, but I look at it the same way as Tennessee. What's Tennessee selling to a young man who was 10 years old the last time Tennessee played in an SEC championship game? So it's all about how you go about recruiting, stability at a university. and coaches. And I'll tell you this, I'll end it with this. Graham Harrell is a coach that connects to these younger kids. I think he's really good offensively. I think he could do a good job in 3 to 4 years, maybe taking over a program. But if they lose Graham Harrell, they're going to be even more trouble because nobody's going to want to come to USC knowing that it's probably the guy's last year, especially when you start off with Alabama and you're probably going to take a beating.
We can do, you and I could do another 20 minutes on some of the things that's going on with SC. It's just, it's my, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. And I don't know if you were going to ask the question, but I'm going to go ahead and throw it out.
Go ahead.
If Utah wins on Friday night, they better be playing for a college football player.
All right. The person who came on before you was my buddy Justin Phillips from KPNW in Eugene.
Yep.
And I have said it all week. My producer Gonzo has heard me say it all week that if Utah wins, they've got to be in. I love Paul Feinbaum. He's wrong what he said on Get Up. He's flat out wrong when he says the country doesn't care about Utah. I'm going to throw this to you here. The magic that is, I've said this too many times. Our listeners here are probably tired of me saying it. The magic that's missing in the college football playoff is what does exist in March Madness, and that is the stories of teams that are great, but you haven't heard about them all year. People in the eastern half of the country that have not seen Utah play do not know how terrific a team they are. I don't know if they're going to win tomorrow at Levi's Stadium, but I am telling you, they are possibly the most well-rounded team in college football, Trey.
See, you know me. So you know that I watch college football,
yep.
And I have watched I can tell you I've watched 4 or 5 Utah games this year. Now, they've been 60 minutes? No, but I've watched 4 or 5 Utah football games this year. I think they have a well-balanced offense. I like their defense. I think they have a top coach in the country. Maybe not that top 5, top 10 type thing, but a guy that can get the job done. And he's proven that he has an opportunity. Now, here's the thing. Folks on the West Coast, you're not used to Paul Feinbaum. I grew up with Paul Feinbaum in the state of Alabama. Now, there's a difference. I was on the Gulf Coast, a lot of the state. You know, you know about this, Christopher. It's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But Feinbaum plays to his audience.
Yep.
So when he's out there and he's clamoring for Utah, they don't deserve to be in. They don't deserve this. They're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. Well, he's out there promoting for the SEC.
Heck yeah.
And that's all that he's done in his career. And let me say this. Paul Feinbaum is a nice dude, a good man. He's done a good job making this a living, and he is one of the, if not the top voice for the SEC here in the South. But he plays to his audience. I look at Utah, and I think they're well-balanced. I think that they can give, if they slip, you know, it's going to be interesting because of the games. You know, does Clemson have a bad outing versus Virginia, and do they slide into the 4, and Utah beats up, and they slide into the 3? I'm interested in this. But, I mean, what we love, and you said it, what we love about college football is we love a great underdog story. I think Utah is good enough to play with the top 6 teams in the country. I don't think it's an underdog story, but you know what? Folks around the country, they look at it, and they think, oh, Utah, okay, well, that's interesting. But I think Utah has proved in the last 8 years that they can hang with some big boys. I remember it very vividly. And you can say Alabama didn't want to be there.
Oh, yeah, Sugar Bowl.
You can say that they weren't motivated. But that Sugar Bowl down in New Orleans, Utah came in there and they took care of business. So, look.
They took care of business in the first quarter in that game. It was 21-0.
And then the thing was over with. So, I mean, you know, I look at it now. I'm excited if Utah gets in because, you know what, you can say, oh, well, if Oklahoma beats Baylor, you know, about this, everybody gets the Jalen Hurts matchup, you know, and maybe he gets playing on the SEC team. I think to myself, do they deserve it? Do they deserve it over Utah? You know, and I think it helps their case that USC finished out the year strong. So I hope, because my opinion on it is, too, we need some West Coast vibes in the college football
playoff. I agree.
Playoff.
Yeah.
And I'm in the South. I make my money talking to people in the South. But, man, it can't be Big Ten, you know, Big 12, ACC, SEC all the time. We need somebody else to sneak in there. And I think in the end, if everything goes well, I think it would be better for college football in the long run if you can get Utah in there. Because what happens if they go in there and they play a hell of a first game
and then they have a chance to play for a national championship. So, look, I'm all for it. And if it happens, I'm not going to be complaining. I'll watch just like I'll watch any other game.
You are preaching to the choir, brother. We've got 45 seconds left. Tell me what happens in Atlanta.
I think LSU, I think Joe Burrow and them come out. I think it's going to be a little shaky at first. I think Georgia's defense is going to try to bring a bunch of different blitz packages at Joe Burrow and get him confused. But I think when you have a running game like LSU has, and then you have the throwing of Joe Burrow and the way Joe Brady is running this offense, I look at this game. I think in the end, it's going to be somewhere along the lines of 35-17, 35-20. LSU, they're going to be playing in the college football playoff, and hey, we'll get about what 4 or 5 more weeks of Edo. So
heck yeah,
I'll take it, man. I just think I think Georgia will be playing in the Sugar Bowl, and I don't think they win the SEC championship. And I'll say this on the way out: if Georgia loses on Saturday, Christopher Gabriel, let me tell you something.
Yes, sir.
Their window of winning a national championship is starting to get very, very slim because they've had the last 4 years to try to win one. And they hadn't pulled it through yet.
I couldn't agree with you more. Folks, now you see why we bring him on. Trey Wallace, host of The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville. Mr. Wallace, tell folks out here how they can follow you.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at TreyWallace_ on every day from 3 to 6 on The Drive at Fox Sports Knoxville. And covering the SEC, covering Tennessee, and covering college football and basketball. It's what we love, man. I'm so thankful to come on with you. Hope you have a great weekend, and let's enjoy the last big weekend of college football until we get to the playoffs.
Right on. It is always a pleasure, my friend. The best to all of you guys at Fox Sports Knoxville. Thanks for taking the time, my man.
Thank you, brother. Can't wait for you to come with.
Right on. There you go. Trey Wallace. Man, I love Trey. I love when he comes on. Coming up next, we're going to bring it home to the Mountain West. We're going to talk with Dave Southern from The Athletic up in Boise. We're going to preview the Mountain West Championship game, Hawaii and Boise State. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
We promised you that up through the three or four programs before Christmas Eve, we were going to do one Christmas song a day, hand selected and placed at random by producer Gonzo. When we say it, we deliver. We also deliver great conference championship previews, and this will be no different. My man Dave Southern covers Boise State for The Athletic, does a tremendous job, and I love bringing him on the program, and he joins us right now. Mr. Southern, how are you today?
Christopher, I am very happy to be on. It is always a pleasure. Whenever you reach out, I'm always looking forward to it, so I'm glad you were able to get me back on.
Well, and do we need to, even though you went to Colorado and I didn't go to Minnesota, but, you know, we both lived there for many years, do we need to talk at all about the disaster that was the Wisconsin-Minnesota game?
We can only talk about it in the fact that, you know, as everybody jokes about it, and I know Fleck talked about it afterward, but it's such a Minnesota thing. For you, teams aren't usually terrible. They're always close to hitting, being at that next level, and they can never quite get over the hump. So that was almost expected.
The standard tweet coming out of Minneapolis was, why can't we have nice things?
Yes, that's pretty much perfect.
Hey, I want to start by going back to the Florida State-Boise State game. What did you learn about this Boise State team in that game? And really, we're talking about the second half. What did you learn that day?
I think I learned that, you know, despite the fact that they have some fairly young players at some key spots, that there's a resilience to this team, and that maybe they were going to win a little bit ugly this year. You know, you look in that game, they won by 5, they were down by 18, and then the week after they went and they beat Marshall by 7, and that kind of backed it up a little bit. And that's the way it's been this year. They have not really blown out a lot of teams like the Boise State teams in the past, but they're 11-1. The thing is, they're going to find out ways to win ball games, and they're going to be different ways maybe, but they, even if it's ugly, even if it's close, they're going to find a way to win. And that really stood out to me. There's a bit of a resilience on the team from guys that are true freshmen all the way up to a 6-year senior like David Moa.
You know, it's interesting you should say that, Dave. Boy, I couldn't agree with you more, and I made this point a little bit earlier in the week, and that is that championship teams, whether we're talking about a conference championship team or a national championship team, and you can go back year after year after year, and it holds true, they have one game that something crazy happens, a break, some freakish thing that happens, mm-hmm. and for me, with you guys, it was the Wyoming game and the missed field goal that allowed Boise State to win. But it just the way the season's gone for the Broncos, that really wasn't that surprising.
No, because I think I've annoyed my editor enough this year when I'm writing a game story at the end of the night, like, hey, I can write the they won ugly story again. You know, I find myself doing that more often than not. Like, and as you mentioned, the Wyoming game, Wyoming almost was in field goal range to beat, you know, to try to win it in regulation. Boise State made some nice defensive stops, as we said, you know, kind of showing some resilience. And then obviously Wyoming missed the OT field goal that let Boise State win. So they, again, you know, in that game right there, boiled down, is kind of what you even saw back in the last day of August, that they could, you know, find ways to win games. And this isn't necessarily the Boise State teams of the past where they score 60 and the other team would get 10 points. That's not the way it is. And, some people don't love that here, but they're still winning, and I think that's all that should matter.
All about the W. Fly the W, as we would say in Chicago. Our good friend Dave Southern covers Boise State for the Athletic, covers the Mountain West. The BYU game, what did that game do? That was a loss, and it was a game, and at one point it was stunning. 28-10, Boise State was down late in the third mm-hmm. quarter. What did that do to this team to help them refocus?
Yeah, I think really for them, that was – In many ways, of course, it was a turning point because there were certain factors that, well, they weren't very good. You know, whether it's just you can get hyper into it, like on third, you know, on third down, they were pretty bad. They were really bad, and they've been really good on that this season. But I think for them, what it showed them was that two plays made the difference. You know, BYU ran two basically trick plays that scored touchdowns, and that of course made all the difference in the world. And I think for Boise State, it really made them think about, hey, you can't take a step off at any point of a game if you're going to be in a lot of close games. And that's what they've done. And they have not let teams do those things against them. And I think for even what it would really help too was that was Chase Cord's first start. And the, you know, Hank Bachmeier had been a starter all year, and that was Chase's first start. I think that maybe they started to think about, okay, what else do we have? And they've eventually gone to Jalen Henderson, and he's been great the last three games. So I think that there were some learning things from that game, and obviously they've done it to the point where they haven't had to lose since.
Before we get to Hawaii, as long as you mentioned Hank Bachmeier, you know, Brian Harsin, head coach Brian Harsin, had an interesting comment that I think a lot of Fresno State fans would wish that Jeff Tedford subscribed to this year regarding who plays quarterback. And this is what Mr. Harsin said. He said, and I'm quoting, "We move receivers around, or we change DBs or a linebacker, and nobody says a word. You change a quarterback, and it's like, what's happening? And that's just not how we operate." Close quote. You know, Dave, most teams don't operate that way. But Boise has been able to do that, whether it's Bachmeier, Cord, or you have Jalen Henderson starting. I mean, they've been able to do it without missing a beat.
It's that to me, has been the most remarkable thing this season. They went into the year with a healthy quarterback competition. I really thought it was a two-horse race. Brian Harsin every single time would mention Jalen Henderson. And we saw Jalen improve, but, you know, it was just kind of like, that's nice. He's a senior. They're just saying nice things about him. And it was actually the first time they played Hawaii about 2 months ago. They played all three in that game, and all three played well. You know, Cord and Henderson threw touchdown passes in that game, and you really kind of saw, like, oh, they weren't kidding. And that's been remarkable. Jalen Henderson's improvement to me in the year, you know, in a year and a half since his first spring ball here has been about as good as anybody I've ever seen around here.
When I saw the name, I was mentioning to my producer earlier that the depth up there is remarkable. And I think it's a credit to a coach. And, I mean, listen, I'm a guy who said I understood why this team stayed with Jorge Reyna all year. And so fans here will think, well, wait a minute, why are you saying something different about Boise State? Because I think It comes down to a head coach's, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it comes down to a head coach's confidence level of the guys that he has on his depth chart. If he believes that guy can come in and win games, it's not about just giving somebody a shot. If he believes a second or third string guy can come in and win games, he is going to make a move.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Hank Bachmeier was 7-0 as the starter. He has only played in one game since that Hawaii game on October 12th because of some injuries, but he's able to play now. But despite the fact that he was 7-0, Brian Harsin and that staff, they said it as much this week that they want to go with the hot hand. They feel like Jalen Henderson, the last three games, what he's given them is enough confidence in himself and for the team that he can keep it up against Hawaii and into a bowl game potentially. And I think that that was a little surprising, to be honest, but you understand the logic that that they've been scoring, you know, quite a bit. He's responsible for 9 total touchdowns, 3 in each of the 3 games he started. He hasn't turned the ball over. He's rarely been sacked. You know, all those things that they like, you see it in action. And it's just, as much as I'm sure people want to see Hank Bachmeier get in, and he's a great young talent, I don't know how you could argue with pulling Jalen Henderson with how the offense has played.
We're talking with our good friend Dave Southern. He covers Boise State for The Athletic. He's a wonderful writer. You've seen me retweet his articles. He has a humanity in his writing that just speaks to me, and I know it would to you as well. Make sure you check him out. I want to switch this to Hawaii. This is a team that Fresno State beat out on the island with a field goal as time expired, 41-38. The most telling thing in that game, though, for me, Dave, was they were down 14 points, and they scored 14 points in 65 seconds and nearly sent the game into overtime. Now, you played them back on October 12th. You won 59-37. It was never really a game. But I would think that one of the things that probably concerns Brian Harsin, I'm guessing, is that when they are clicking, whether it's Cole McDonald or whomever, they have explosibility. They have the ability to just turn it on, and suddenly the scoreboard is lighting up, and you're like, wait a minute, we were just up 3 touchdowns. Now it's a 3-point game.
Yeah, you said such nice words about my writing, but then you make up a word and it works great. So don't you're no slouch yourself, but. I think they actually saw it in action a little bit in that game even. Hawaii actually cut it to 15, and then Boise State was able to get a late touchdown from George Helani to make it a 22-point game. But they saw it in action a little bit in that game. It was late, so it wasn't anything that was really going to cause for panic. But I think that's definitely a concern, and I think that's part of the reason why they ran the ball decently well in that game. But I think they really want to do a better job of it Saturday with Helani to keep that offense off the field for Hawaii. I mean, do everything you can because it's so difficult to defend. And actually, as you kind of mentioned, it ties into what Boise State's doing right now. They've got some injuries in the defensive backfield that are, it's a little unstable back there. So I think that, that could be a matchup advantage for Hawaii with that just, cabal of wide receivers against Boise State's DBs.
And one of the reasons, Dave, that I started with the Florida State game is because I also have to believe that what that game did, I mean, I watched every snap of that game, and what that second half did is it certainly infused freshmen and redshirt freshmen getting out there and the entire team as a whole. It showed them right off the bat that we can be. And granted, it wasn't the usual hostile environment at Doak Campbell Stadium, but it was a hostile environment. It was certainly hostile humidity that day. And it showed them that we can get down and we can come back. And I've got to believe that has served them well all year going into any game, not knowing what was going to be coming their way, no matter who the opponent was.
I think it's a really good point. If we want to go back even further, think about their bowl game that got canceled.
Oh, yes.
They've had to deal with some weird stuff, and so I think that with that Florida State game, getting moved, the day before the game and their last walkthrough, there was lightning, which was hilarious because that's obviously what canceled the bowl game, and they had to finish it indoors. They had to go to a different place. They had to play in Florida State's home stadium, and they still were able to handle it. And I think that has really served them well. And as we talked about with the resilience and all that stuff, that right there just showed them, you're not going to be thrown for a loop like this most likely the rest of the way. You can handle it. yeah. and everything else, it, by comparison, is probably going to be a little easier.
I remember getting texts from you in the airport when and you, did,
yeah.
Yeah, you and I were talking, and I just thought, you know what? Let me just get out of your life for a couple of weeks, and let you get back to Boise, and we'll talk when you get home. Because
yeah.
That sounded like such a fiasco. I my goodness, you and I we talked at length about it. As long as we're talking about the Dallas area, so how hard, by your best estimation? How hard has it been for this team, if at all, to deal with what could be a distraction, and that being a potential Cotton Bowl bid? Obviously, it's out of Boise's control because of Memphis-Cincinnati, but if that game breaks right, they could certainly be in play, but that you just have to take care of business first before anything else.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the key. It's Boise State just has to take care of business no matter what. You got to win that conference championship if you want to be in the mix. And what actually might help them this year is, obviously, you remember last year, the AAC championship was before the Mountain West championship. Now it's getting played concurrently. They're being played at the same time. So Boise State doesn't have time to even let that enter their minds about, like, oh, if Team X wins, then we're not in. So I think that helps with the focus a little bit. And probably it's going to inspire them a little bit. I know some guys are afraid to talk about it, but, like, Curtis Weaver told us recently that at the beginning of the year, they'll have like a goal pyramid, and whatever's at the very top is something that's probably difficult to achieve, but reasonable. And the team decides on it. And they decided that it was going to be to try to make a New Year's Six Bowl. And so I think that it's obviously something that the team wants. They're not going to try to avoid talking about it, although some might. And I think it's going to be a motivating factor for them. The fact that they don't know what's going to happen, and even especially if Cincinnati wins. So I think that they have to that's going to push them a little bit on Saturday for sure.
So lastly, Dave, I've asked everybody else. We've had all the P5 previews and you, and I've asked everybody the same question. I'm going to ask you the same thing. Who wins? I'm looking at Hawaii's defense, and they're barely in the top 100. For all the explosive weapons they have on offense, they can barely stop anybody.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the difference, because Boise State can throw it. They can run it. So whatever's working, they're going to stick to it. And I think that their defense is good enough. They have a good enough pass rush to just slightly keep Hawaii off of what they want to do. And I don't know if they're going to, hang 59 on them, but I still think that, certainly they could win by 2-3 touchdowns.
Tell folks how they can find your work on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at Dave Southern. That's Dave, S-O-U-T-H-O-R-N. And check out The Athletic. I had a couple stories this week that I was pretty proud of that I think turned out pretty well. So if you check it out, you can just click on the college football tab and Boise State, and all my stuff's up there.
I'll just tell you, folks, he comes with the CGP endorsement. I love Dave's work, and it's always so solid. Dave, it's such a treat to have you on the program. Enjoy the game, and I'm sure that you and I will talk again before the end of the football season.
I'd love it, as always. Thanks, Christopher. Appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Dave Southern, again, it's at Dave Southern, Dave, S-O-U-T-H-O-R-N. He's a wonderful writer. One more thing is next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Bring me some Sam Cooke. We can ride this out or no? Maybe a little tight? Yeah. Let's bring it on home, brother. Coming up at 5 o'clock. Get a little bit of the pregame, and then 5:20, thereabouts, Cowboys, Bears, Lakefront, Chicago. We talked about this first half hour, big game for both teams. We both think it is a bigger game for Dallas, certainly a big game for Jason Garrett, big game for Matt Nagy. If the Cowboys win, they go a game and a half up on the Eagles, and if they lose, they go into a 6-7 tie with the Eagles. I said game and a half. Because the Eagles haven't played yet. One more thing today, just to give you kind of an idea of what's happening with the Access Bowl, which would be the Cotton Bowl that Dave Southern and I were talking about. The deal is this. Cincinnati and Memphis play. Cincinnati is 10-2. They're ranked 20th. Memphis is 11-1. They're ranked 17th. Boise State is 11-1. They're ranked 19th. So as you look at this, And I understand that folks in this audience are not Boise State fans, but there are some who put the Mountain West before anything else and would like to see the Mountain West do well whenever possible. What Boise has to do is they have to beat Hawaii. I believe they will beat Hawaii. They destroyed them earlier in the year. They beat Hawaii 59-37. I don't think a whole bunch has changed with these two teams. If anything, Boise State's gotten a little better on both sides of the ball. They've had some shakiness with injuries, as Dave mentioned. But I think Boise State wins. And what they need to have happen is Cincinnati needs to beat Memphis. If Memphis wins, Memphis is in. Memphis will go to the Cotton Bowl. If Cincinnati wins, then the question will be, how much will a win? If they beat Memphis badly, and somehow the Hawaii Boise State game is close, then you can almost count on Cincinnati getting in. And then you wonder, what is the committee thinking of Gonzo? Is the committee looking at a bigger TV audience in Cincinnati versus Boise? Boise State's not going to get the whole West Coast behind them. They're not a San Francisco, LA team. They're in Boise. I wonder how much of a consideration it's going to be. Bottom line for Boise State is they have to win big, and they have to hope for a close win from Cincinnati.
That's exactly what they have to hope for. And the thing here is the fact that Cincinnati didn't drop too much in the ranking after losing to Memphis, and that's key. Just like we talked about Utah getting up to 5 and Georgia being right behind them, this is the exact situation here for me, too. I think that it doesn't benefit Boise that Cincinnati's there.
No question about it. Folks, my great thanks to some terrific broadcasters and writers, Justin Phillips, Trey Wallace, Dave Southern, Gonzo, usual fine job. It's Art Hop. Come on down, 1415 Fulton. Enjoy yourself here or hang out on 940 ESPN and enjoy Bears and Cowboys. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Until then, you are on your own.
Your home of Fresno State football.
To Harper, a stiff arm, sending him off all the way to the goal line. Touchdown, Fresno State.
940 ESPN, KFIG Fresno.